Hare Krishna. Welcome back to our Bhagavata Bhakti Shastri course. We are in the middle of the 7th chapter right now. So let's look at the verse which we start off with, 7.13. So we completed the first section. The 7th chapter has three sections. First is knowledge about Krishna. And then the second section from 13 to 25 is about how not. Knowledge of Krishna leads to surrender, and it talks about people who surrender, people who don't surrender, and people who surrender to something other than Krishna. So, let's start with Tribhir Gunamayair Bhavair Ebhi Sarvamidam Jagat Mohitam Navijanati Mamebhya Paramavyam. So, Tribhir Gunamayair Bhavair. So, there are three modes. Filled with the three modes, made of the three modes, comprising of these three existences, that is Bhavair, Tribhir Gunamayair Bhavair, Ebhi Sarvamidam Jagat. This whole world is Mohitam. Everything in this world, everyone in this world is bewildered by Mohitam, by the three modes. Na Abhijanati. They do not know. What do they not know? Mamebhya Paramavyam. That I am Param. I am transcendental and I am imperishable. Paramavyam. So here Krishna is talking about the three modes, his relationship with the three modes. And Krishna is emphasizing the point that he is beyond the three modes. His position is transcendental, always. So, Tribhir Gunamayair Bhavair. We have these three modes. But Krishna's position is transcendental to the three modes. And in fact, it is the three modes which cause the bewilderment and which make people forget, misunderstand Krishna, forget Krishna. Mohitam na abhijanati, na abhijanati. So, how do the modes cause forgetfulness of Krishna? See, the modes color our perception of everything. Like if I have red tinted glasses, everything will seem red to me. So the modes themselves comprise different tinting of different color tinted glasses. So goodness is one kind of tinted glass, passion is like one kind of tinted glass, ignorance is one kind of tinted glass. And all these three are different glasses and they all cause a different kind of tinting. But more tinting means coloring, contamination of our vision. Now beyond that, in general, all the three modes are material. So overall, there is a material covering. There's a material contamination, a material distortion of our perception. And because of that, we don't understand Krishna's transcendental position. Mahamebhya Paramavayam. Krishna is saying, Param. I am transcendentally situated. And Avayam. So Krishna, Avayam means imperishable. So transcendental and imperishable. So Krishna is beyond the limits of time and space. So Param can be correlated with the limits of space. Avyaya can be correlated with the time, limit of time. Everything in this world is limited by time and space. But Krishna is transcendental to the limitations of time and space. Mamebhya Paramavyam. And now Prabhupada talks about in the purport that how there are even people in goodness are bewildered about Krishna. How do we see that? We see that in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where practically everyone, the demigods like Indra, even Brahma, and even Shiva. Shiva, there is no description directly of Shiva being bewildered in Vrindavan. But later on, Shiva takes the side of Vanasur. And then later on, when Shiva Jwara is defeated by Narayan Jwara, in the fight of Vanasur's forces with Krishna's forces. At that time, Shiva surrenders and offers prayers. So in this way, actually, everybody is bewildered by the three modes. So the contamination of three modes prevents us from understanding what actually reality is. And that causes us to stay in illusion. And now, you know, people talk about illusion in relative terms also. That means a drunkard thinks that alcohol is the source of happiness. Although alcohol is the source of bondage and misery. So like that, there are illusions within the material world also. Within the material world, there are different things which seem pleasurable but turn out to be miserable afterwards. So that is true. But what Krishna is talking about over here is something much greater. Actually, Krishna is talking about how in this world, everyone is overcome by illusion with respect to understanding Him. The illusions with respect to things of this world get us into material bondage. They may cause us, if a person is in passion and then the person gets addicted to alcohol, that person may go into ignorance. And sometimes a person may be in ignorance, may be addicted to something, and by some laborious efforts, by willpower, some therapy, may become sober and give up addiction. That person will be freed from the ignorance of ignorance, the illusion of ignorance, illusion caused by the mode of ignorance, but still that person may still have an illusion of passion. I think, yes, now I am free from addiction, now I can work hard and I can make it big in life, I'll have a big house, nice family, and I'll be happy in life. So that is an illusion and passion. So there may be movement through various kinds of illusions, from passion down to ignorance, or from ignorance down to passion, or even to goodness. But overall, the person stays in illusion. As long as we do not understand about Krishna properly, we stay in illusion. So the three modes, they may cause their own individual illusions. But beyond that, the three modes also cause illusion about Krishna. And that illusion is what Krishna is focusing on over here. Because that is the illusion that keeps us in bondage in material existence. Now naturally the question will come up, okay, if the modes bind a person and keep the person under illusion, then how can such a person come out of illusion? That Srila Prabhupada describes in his purport in the next verse, and Krishna answers first in the next verse of that also. So, Daiviyaisha gunamai mamamaya duratyaya mamevaye prapadyante mayametam tarantite. Daiviya, divine indeed. Esha gunamai, that actually this energy of Krishna is divine indeed. Mama maya duratyaya, this is my maya and it is duratyaya, very difficult to overcome. Mameva ye prapadyante, but those who surrender unto me, mameva ye prapadyante, maya metam tarantite, they will cross beyond maya and they will come out of illusion. So here, what is Krishna saying exactly? In the previous verse, Krishna has stated that Tribhir Gunamaya Bhavar Ebhi Sarvamidam Jagat. So he said that the covering of the three modes deludes everyone. Now he is taking that understanding further and he is saying, so that means the 13th verse is saying how the covering of three modes prevents the living entities from understanding him. So if we consider a three-level hierarchy, what does 13th say? 13th say that the living entities are here at the lower level. The three modes are covering the living entities and that's why the living entities cannot understand Krishna. So say we have the sun, we have the clouds and we have observers on the earth, people on the earth. So when the clouds are there, the clouds block the perception of the sun for the observers on the earth. So now it may appear as if the clouds are covering the sun. But the sun is infinite and sun is far greater than the clouds. Sun cannot be covered. What is covered is the observer's vision. So Krishna is telling that he's like the sun. He's told in the previous verse, Paramavayam. He's transcendental. He is inexhaustible, imperishable. So it is not he that is covered. It is actually we who are covered. Now beyond that, Krishna is telling something more in this verse. That actually this covering is also under His control. So the 13th verse said that there is a covering of the three modes which prevents us from perceiving. Now Krishna in the 14th verse takes the point further and says, this covering is actually not something that is independent of Krishna. This covering is under Krishna. And this covering is due to Krishna's energy. So, mama maya duratya. Mama maya. Krishna is saying, this is my maya. It is my maya which is putting the living entities under illusion. So, he is talking about three modes in the previous verse. Tribhir guna mayer bhava evi sarvamidam jagat. That by the three modes, everybody is deluded. And now he is saying that actually his maya is made up of these three modes. Guna mayer, he says. Now, and he says, this is daivi. Daivi means divine indeed. So why divine? Because we may say that actually it is maya which makes people do demoniac things. Maya is what drives people away from Krishna towards bad things. So if maya takes people away towards wrong things, then why should maya be considered to be divine? No, maya makes people lusty, maya makes people greedy, maya makes people angry. And all the absurdities and perversities that people engage in are ultimately caused by maya. So then, how can maya be considered to be divine? See, the absurdities and perversities in people's actions are not caused by maya. They are facilitated by maya. They are caused by people's own free will. So we have discussed earlier the example of a multiple choice paper. In a multiple choice paper, there may be four options and one of them is right, remaining three are wrong. Remaining four may be wrong. So when they are wrong like this, who is making them wrong? Is it the teacher or the student? The teacher is providing the options, but the teacher also provides the education for choosing the right options. And the student is responsible for the wrong choice. The student cannot tell the teacher that, you know, you give the wrong options and I simply think of the options that you give. So if I get poor marks, you are responsible, not me. No, so maya gives us options, but it is we who take the choices. And if we take guidance from Guru Sadhu Shastra, we won't take the wrong choices, we'll take the right choices. So the purpose of the teacher is not to fail the student, but to promote the student. And if the student fails, that is primarily because the student doesn't understand. Student doesn't understand what? Student has not understood the subject properly. Student has not studied the subject properly. Student has not applied their intelligence while passing the exam. So in this way, we can understand what is the cause of the problem. The problem is not caused by maya. The setup by which the illusions are present, the temptations are present, they are created by, that setup is created by maya. But it is we who choose to go into maya, or it is we who choose to stay out of maya. And each of us has the power to stay out of maya if we want. So now, when we move forward, mama maya duratya. Krishna is saying, this is my energy. So it is called divine because the purpose ultimately it is serving is positive. It's a good purpose. It's like the purpose of the exam ultimately is good. Although for some students, the exam may result in provide a bad result. The students fail in the exam. And they feel, oh, wow, this exam I have failed, and they may become dejected by that. And the failure may reflect on their career as negative. But overall, the purpose of the exam is to help them make positive development in their career. So, Krishna, Daivi, it is divine. It is because it is connected with Krishna, this energy is considered divine. And Duratyaya. Duratyaya means that this energy is actually very difficult to overcome. Duratyaya, mama maya. Krishna says, my energy, and it's difficult to overcome. Prabhupada gives the example for this mama maya. He says that when a parent wants to discipline a child, the parent may engage a tutor. And the parent loves the child, but the tutor may be a disciplinarian, may be strict, to ensure that the child gets educated properly. So, the parent is like Krishna, and the strict tutor is like maya. So, mama maya duratyaya. Duratyaya means that it's very difficult to overcome, almost impossible. Why? Because actually Krishna is determined to ensure that only those who use their free will properly can get through. and that is ensured, implemented, actualized by Maya Devi. So once a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, if our purpose is to serve Krishna, then why is Maya so strong? And Prabhupada almost immediately replied, because your purpose is not strong. What does it mean? If our purpose is to serve Krishna, then why is Maya so strong? Your purpose is not strong. Actually, all the temptations trouble us as long as we are not determined to serve Krishna. Once we become determined to serve Krishna, then we do not get overcome by temptations so much. The temptations come, but we can put them aside because we understand that I am going to be fixed in my purpose of serving Krishna. Actually, this principle of a strong purpose helping a person to overcome temptations is seen everywhere. You know, when a student is serious about studies and wants to crack a particular exam, say the purpose is very strong, I am going to study and I am going to succeed in this exam. Then even if there is some favorite sports match, some popular TV show, some super hit movie, which is then all these temptations are there, they could be potential distractions. But these distractions will distract the students whose purpose is not strong. But those students whose purpose is fixed, one-pointed, they will not be deluded. They will not become distracted. So, mam eva ye prapadyante. What does it mean to make our purpose strong? It means to take shelter of Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. Mam eva ye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. So those people will cross over Maya. Maya metam tarantite. They'll go beyond Maya. How will they go beyond Maya? By wholehearted surrender to Krishna. So, if a person goes to visit somebody's house and that person has got a ferocious dog as a guard and maybe some German Shepherd or Doberman, giant dog, what is that? And that dog starts growling as soon as he sees his dog is saying this is a trespasser. And the dog starts charging towards this person. He starts charging. Now he may think, what can I do? Now if I decide I'll try to fight with the dog, it's impossible. That dog is trained to bite and beat, practically, to bite trespassers and drive them away. So what can a person do? Now if this visitor, if I am the visitor and I say I know the owner and I call the owner and the owner comes out and says, oh, this is my friend. He says, let's say the dog's name is Tommy. Tommy, stop! Stop! And then Tommy stops again. So now my telling the dog to stop is not going to work, but the owner is just one word. That same dog who is bristling and growling and about to pounce on me. That dog suddenly stops and becomes calm. How? That magical transformation happens when the dog gets the order of its master. Same way, when we turn towards Krishna, when we surrender to Krishna, at that time we become free from Maya. How do we become free from Maya? Because surrender to Krishna is the choice that Maya also wants us to make. Ultimately, just like when we make a right choice in the multiple choice paper, then that question goes off. We get to the next question after that. So like that, the whole purpose of the temptations and tribulations that are present in Maya. Temptations means the idea that let me do this, let me do this, and then I'll enjoy. Temptations means promises of pleasure. And tribulations means threats of pain. So all these promises of pleasure and threats of pain that are there, they are all removed for a person who surrenders to Krishna. Because Krishna tells the material energy to withdraw, hold back, stop. There's no more need to test this devotee. Mayam etam tarantite. By Maya's arrangement, by Krishna's arrangement, the person can tarantite, go beyond Maya. So Krishna telling, that means this verse has two parts. First part is telling how Maya deludes, that the VHA guna maya durateya. So the two describers for Maya are Daivi and Duratteya. So Daivi is divine and Duratteya is formidable, insurmountable, very difficult. So these describers indicate the power of Maya. And then the second part, that is C and D of this verse, they introduce us to a power greater than Maya, and that is the power of Krishna. And how do we access that power of Krishna? By surrender. So, when we surrender to Krishna, Mayam etam tarantite, we go beyond Maya. That is the process. And when we follow this process, we all make spiritual advancement rapidly. So, now we may wonder what exactly is surrender. How do we surrender? We will discuss about surrender more in the 18th chapter when we talk about Sarvadharman Pratityajamamekam Sharanam Vraja. But here suffice it to say that surrender is not passive. Surrender is active. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks based on the scriptures about six elements of surrender. Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjanam Rakshishyati Te Vishwaso Goptritve Varanam Tatha Atmanikshepa Karpanye Shadavidha Sharanagati. So he says that actually, anukulyasya sankalpa and pratikulyasya varjanam, accepting that which is favorable and rejecting that which is unfavorable, that is surrender. Accepting that which is favorable and rejecting that which is unfavorable. So, what does this involve? It involves choice, constant, conscientious choice. So that means, how do I surrender to Krishna? Surrender doesn't mean, we have the quintessential example of surrender, Draupadi surrendering to Krishna. Krishna, help! She raising her heart and hands and surrendering. Yes, that is one way of surrendering. But that is not just the only way of surrendering. Even when Arjuna is fighting on the battlefield, with his full intelligence, full determination, shooting the arrows, that is also surrender. No, it is not that just Draupadi is raising her hand as a surrender. Arjuna shooting arrows intelligently and fiercely, ferociously, that is also surrender. How is that? Because surrender essentially means choosing the actions that take us towards Krishna and rejecting the actions that take us away from Krishna. So, for Draupadi, in that particular situation when she was being dishonored, she tried her best. She tried to hold on to her sari and she tried to defend her honor. But when that didn't work, then what did she do? She surrendered to Krishna. So that is important. Now, we see that Arjuna also surrenders to Krishna at the start of the Bhagavad Gita when he says that, Pichhami tvam dharma sammoodha chetaha. I ask you what I should do. So, he is not necessarily raising up his hands to surrender, but he's folding his hands and asking Krishna for knowledge. But then when Arjuna starts shooting arrows, he's acting on Krishna's instructions, and that acting on Krishna's instructions is also surrender. So, to understand about surrender, let's look at, from the broad perspective, what is the basic principle of spiritual life? The basic principle of spiritual life is harmonizing our will with the divine will, with Krishna's will. So, that harmonization can be sometimes be through activity and sometimes through outer inactivity, but inner deference to Krishna's will, inner surrender to Krishna's will. So that will vary how it will be externally expressed. So essentially surrender means giving up our will for accepting Krishna's will. Now how we will accept Krishna's will vary from time, place and circumstance. So that we cannot know in advance. Therefore, what is important is, we always be thinking, what is anukul, what is pratikul? So, that means, when we do our sadhana diligently, through our sadhana also we are surrendering to Krishna. That means, when we do our seva diligently, through that also we are surrendering to Krishna. So, when we know that certain situations are tempting, going to tempt us, moving away from those situations, that is also surrender to Krishna. When we feel our senses getting agitated, and we reject that agitation, crush that agitation with determination, that is also surrender to Krishna. Surrender can come in many forms. Essentially for us, what we should focus on is anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Whatever is favorable, accept. What is unfavorable, reject. So much of what comprises surrender will be within the mind. Now within the mind, if we entertain thoughts that take us away from Krishna, if we fuel desires that take us away from Krishna, then we are not surrendering. We are actually rebelling against Krishna. We may not have any direct intention to rebel against Krishna, but essentially the result will be that we will be rebelling against Krishna. On the other hand, when we turn towards Krishna and surrender, that means we choose the thoughts and the desires that will take us closer to Krishna. So then, Prabhupada quotes several verses. Prabhupada's quote is one of his favorite quotes from Chitta Shuddha Upanishad. He quotes it repeatedly. Tameva viditva atimrityumeti. So one will go beyond birth and death. From the Chitta Shuddha Upanishad, he's quoting, freedom is possible only by tameva viditva, knowing that absolute truth. So now the question may come up that yes, why don't, if by surrender to Krishna one can become liberated, then why doesn't everyone surrender to Krishna? So namam duskriti no moodha prapadyante naradhamaha mayaya parita jnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. So namam duskriti no moodha, actually those who are moodhas, those who are foolish, they do not surrender to Vidushkriti, no. So Krishna is talking here about four kinds of people who do not surrender to Him. So in the previous verse, Krishna has said that by surrender to Him, people can get free from illusion. And the question comes up, if it is possible to become free from illusion by surrender to Krishna, then why don't people accept that path of surrender and thereby become free from illusion, become free from difficulty? Now that is because Krishna says that they are duskritina. So kritina, kriti means activity. In fact, it means meritorious activity, kriti. And duskritina means not meritorious activity but notorious activity. So activity that involves some level of talent, some level of intelligence, but that activity is in the wrong direction. So that which is not meritorious, but which is not too notorious, duskritina. So Krishna says, these are the people, na pam prapadyante, that do not surrender to me. And who are these people? Moodha. Four categories. Krishna says, moodha is the foolish. Then Naradhama, the lowest among the mankind. Then Maya Aparita Jnana, those whose knowledge is stolen by illusion. And Asuram Bhavam Ashrita, those who are the outright demoniac people. Now, these four categories, who do they represent? Prabhupada gives an elaborate purport where he describes who are these four categories of people. Now, interestingly, if you look at the commentaries of the previous Acharyas, we look at Chakravarti Pad, Baldev Vidyabhushan, Ramanucharya, Madhvacharya. You know, all of them describe slightly different people. Means they explain these categories as referring to different kinds of people. So what does it mean? Actually, we have to understand that scriptural knowledge is not just in the text. It is also in the context. That means scriptural knowledge is, yes, there is the text, there are the words of the Bhagavad Gita important, but there also, it is meant to be in the context. Context means that it has to be relevant. You know, that many times people say that, you know, we have to preserve the purity of the knowledge. Yes, there should not be any speculation, there should not be any deviation. That is true. But one important attribute that we have to preserve is also, which is a part of the tradition, is the relevance. And every acharya explains the commentary, explains the scripture in a way that is relevant to the current context. So, if our presentation of scripture is not relevant, then actually we are not being faithful to the tradition. Because the relevance is an integral part of the tradition that is to be preserved. So tradition is not just something immobile and static that is preserved. Tradition is itself living. So that's why we will see that different acharyas explain different things in different ways. That means that there are four categories of people who do not surrender to Krishna. But what these four categories refer to, if the Acharyas are writing a commentary, say, Ramacharya is writing a commentary in the 10th century, 10th, 11th century. Then, when he is going to present a commentary, he is going to observe the people around him at that time. He is going to say that, okay, which are the categories of, who are the people who fit this category? Now, that explanation may be relevant later also in some ways. But the nature of Maya is that avidya constantly keeps getting updated. What does it mean? Avidya keeps coming in newer and newer brands. Ultimately, it's the same old thing. And it's just an excuse, a rationalization, a justification for forgetting Krishna. That's what the essence of Maya is. But Maya comes in newer and newer brands. And countering the latest brand of Maya is the tradition of the Acharyas. So Maya keeps updating herself. And the Acharyas, their commentaries, they keep updating the refutations. So that is how the tradition is. So that's why there are some core principles that remain true, but the Acharyas give their commentaries in terms of countering the current versions of Maya that are prevalent at their times. And because in broad ways, the conceptions of people which block them from moving towards Krishna, those conceptions may vary from person to person. Those conceptions may cause people to go into delusion. And that's why those conceptions are not always the same for everyone. Because the Maya herself comes in different ways. So for example, when Balde Vidyabhushan is writing the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, in Govinda Bhashya commentary. So then, he will explain he will refute the five systems of philosophy apart from Vedanta. And now the systems of philosophy are also not static. You know, there are different scholars in those traditions who write commentaries. So whatever are the thoughts at that particular time, they will be refuted by Balde Vidyabhushan while drawing insights from the universal time independent principles that are taught in the scriptures. Srila Prabhupada, when he's presenting his commentary, he will talk also, he will draw from the same time-independent universal principles, but he will address the issues of his time. So for example, during Prabhupada's times, there will be, say, the conflict between communists and capitalists, and the fear of a third world war because of this conflict. Prabhupada may address this repeatedly in his purport, but that may not be relevant. That may be not relevant now because communism is not so much directly active now. So let's look at the way Srila Prabhupada explains these four categories. So these four categories will be explained by different acharyas in different ways because they are responding to the specific brands of Maya, the specific sets of misconceptions that are misleading people at their times. So, namudha. The word mudha means donkey. It means a fool person who is foolish like a donkey. The opposite of the word mudha is buddha. Buddha is a wise person. And actually, that is buddha is related to buddhi. And then we have buddha. Buddha is in the Buddhistic tradition context, the enlightened person. So, who is a mudha? Mudha is a person who is like a donkey. Now, Prabhupada's purport for this section is quite eloquent. Let's look at some sections of Prabhupada's purport over here. So, the mudhas. So he says that the swine who eat the night soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Similarly, the foolish workers will untiringly continue to hear the sense enjoyable chatting of the flickering mundane world, but will have very little time to hear about the eternal living force that moves the material world. So, in his explanation of mudha, Prabhupada also includes another animal here, that is, Shvavidvaraha Ustrakharai. So Varaha is a hog. Now a hog eats night soil. So night soil is a euphemism for stool. So the hog eats night soil, and the hog is given some sweet meat. Hog says, "I won't prefer that." So what happens is, now somebody may say that actually, you know, why do we blame a hog? You know, hog is simply acting according to nature. Now for hog, halwa may be delicious for us. Halwa is not delicious for a hog. So why should we judge a hog according to our standards? Now what is food for a hog is different from what is food for us. So actually the point here is not that the hog doesn't have its own diet. The point here is that that which is a refuse of the human beings, and that which smells nasty, and that which is abominable, that is what the hog eats. Now whenever we are giving any scriptural example, we have to understand that it's given from a particular perspective. So from the point of a perspective, we have to understand what is being talked about. Here, whenever the scriptures teach something, the point that they are teaching is that we have to learn some lesson. So here the lesson is the lack of discriminating ability. So when we human, if an intelligent human being were given a choice between a foul-smelling substance and a delicious substance, naturally the person would choose a delicious substance. So a person who chooses the foul-smelling substance lacks intelligence. So same way, we say that the hog lacks intelligence over here. So here we are not talking about the way nature has made different living beings with different tastes. That's a fact of nature. We don't deny that fact. And animals are largely programmed to act according to the nature. So animals lack the discriminatory capacity. So when we are looking from the point of view of how nature has made different living beings, you can say that yes, hogs are simply acting according to our nature. But the point is, from the enlightened perspective, that is the scriptural perspective, from the perspective of the intelligent human being who has aligned oneself according to scripture, from that perspective, the hog is lacking discrimination. So the point here is not the specifics, but the generic principle that there is an inability to discriminate between what is palatable and what is unpalatable. So now a donkey or a hog, what does the hog do? What does the donkey do? Donkey just works. And donkey may carry huge bundle of clothes for getting a little grass. Now that grass can be got anywhere, but the donkey carries a huge bundle. Why is that? Because the donkey thinks, I have to do this so that I'll get the grass. So actually eating, sleeping, mating, defending, these are the bodily pleasures. And all living beings are getting that. So human beings who work terribly hard just to get that, they are missing out, they are losing out, they are depriving themselves of what can be available for them truly, what will be far more beneficial for them. What is that? They are depriving themselves of the higher taste, the higher fulfillment that is available through spiritual advancement and devotional connection with Krishna. So the point of the Mudha example is, Prabhupada gives analysis is that actually, people work hard simply for animalistic pleasures. And they don't have to work so hard, but they keep working hard. So nowadays, people have so much stress because of overwork. And most of this overwork is because of self-created duties. Self-created duties means one sets up one's own goals, and then one pursues those goals, and one gets oneself into trouble because of that. So that is Mudha. So Mudha is a person who is just caught up in the working hard for sense pleasure. For the same things that the animals get, one just works hard. And doesn't think. Naradhama, Prabhupada explains. Nara Adhama. Adhama means lowest. Nara is human being. So that person is the lowest among the human beings. What does this refer to? This refers to those human beings who have no spiritual inclination. See, what makes human beings human is their spiritual potential. So human being, what is, there may be a particular physical form that also makes human being, that characterizes human beings. That is true. But then, more than that, from the scriptural perspective, the soul, the human form means a particular level of consciousness, and that consciousness involves the capacity for spiritual realization. So if we consider the continuum is a wide spectrum of consciousness, of levels of consciousness which human beings can have. So the highest are those who have the most evolved spiritual consciousness. They are love for Krishna. Then those who have lesser and lesser connection of Krishna, they will be in this continuum at different locations. So at the lowest end of the spectrum are those who have no interest in spiritual life at all. They are just not interested in spiritual life. So they have sabotaged their own, they have destroyed their own spiritual prospects by their lack of spiritual sensibility. So Prabhupada says that those who are socially and politically developed but who have no religious principles must be considered Naradhamas. So they are socially and politically developed, but they have no religious principles. That means that they are not developing what makes them distinctively human. So that is what makes them Naradhamas. So Naradhama, and then Prabhupada also makes this point, nor is religion without God religion. That's the next sentence. What is not religion without God? You know, there are nowadays there are religions which claim themselves to be religions, but they do not acknowledge the existence of God. Now in today's cultural nomenclature, they may be called religions. But the point is that they have defied the essential principle of religion. That essential principle of religion is to obey God. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. What is dharma? Dharma essentially means to follow the will of God, follow the instruction of God. Then Prabhupada talks about how the Naradhama. Now, what is the tragedy of the Naradhama? Actually, all of us need God. And when we are in the womb, when the pain becomes excruciating, we suffer. And we call out to Krishna at that time. So when we call out to Krishna, we beg for His mercy. And when we beg for His mercy and we seek His mercy, at that time, what happens? You know, that fervent call for Krishna helps us to recognize Krishna, realize Krishna's presence, and Krishna manifests His presence to us. But after that, because the surrender to Krishna at that time is immature, that means that we are surrendered not because of free will, we are surrendered because of coercion, because of force. So when we surrender this way to Krishna, at that time, that surrender is not mature. Mature surrender means we have the option to not surrender and still we surrender. So, later on when we come out of the womb, when the pleasures of this world present themselves again to us, and then we become tempted. So, Prabhupada reminds that there is a grievous suffering in the womb and we have ourselves prayed to Krishna, please help me Krishna. So, those people who are under, you see, stay in illusion. Now, Prabhupada is talking from two perspectives. One is, the human body has the capacity for spiritual inquiry, and the soul, when is in a human embryo, in a human womb, at that time the soul begins the spiritual call also, begins the spiritual journey by calling out to the Lord, but then puts it aside, neglects it for the sake of the worldly pleasures. So the difference between Mudha and Naradhama is that the Mudhas, they are so busy in sensual pleasure that even if they have some spiritual inclination, they just don't give any time for spiritual inclination. But Naradhamas are so, like they're so much, their spiritual inclination is so much relegated to the corner that it is almost as if not present only. And Prabhupada says, by the mercy of Krishna, as is manifested through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy to Jagaya Madai, even the Nadhamas can be elevated. And then a third category is Maya Aparita Jnana. So we have discussed about Maya Aparita Jnana in our study of the Ishopanishad, when we discussed Mantra 10, we discussed actually Andham Tamah Pravishanti Ye Vidyam Upasate Atokuya Ivate Tamo Yau Vidyayam Rataha. So Vidyayam Rataha, those who are in so-called knowledge. So there we discussed different categories of people. So we discussed the 2.42-43 in the Bhagavad Gita, which describes Vedavadrataha, those who follow Vedas, but they think that the goal of the Vedas is simply sense gratification. And then there are those who do not follow the Vedas, but who use their intelligence just for material improvement. And the purpose of knowledge is lost for them. They have knowledge, but the purpose of knowledge has been stolen away from them by Maya. Maya aparita jnanaha. So the jnana is there, but the jnana is stolen away by Maya. Maya aparita. So this refers to all kinds of intellectuals. So they can be scientists, they can be philosophers, they can be authors, they can be speakers. So these people may have intelligence, but unfortunately, the ultimate purpose of intelligence they have lost. And because of that, whatever they do, they stay caught up in illusion. It's like a person who is in the jail, but the person uses the intelligence to understand everything except about the jail. Okay. And the person in jail, suppose the person does a PhD about the wall structure and the ceiling structure of the jail. Well, we could say that knowledge is useful, but the most important thing is, if I'm in a jail, how can I get out of the jail? It's not necessarily that I had to break out of a jail, but is there a process by which I can reform myself and be released from the jail? The important point is I need to come out of the jail. So same way, when we talk about material existence, the most important knowledge is the knowledge that can free us from misery, that can bring us liberation. So what is that knowledge? That knowledge is what Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita. And those people who are intelligent, yet they neglect that knowledge, they are unfortunate. They are included in the category of Maya Aparita Jnana. And Prabhupada includes those who, these people may study scripture also, but they interpret scripture wrong. So they may study Bhagavad Gita and they write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita, but the purpose of study of Gita is surrender to Krishna. And when they reject that purpose and they give some other concocted purpose, then they are also falling in the category of Maya Aparita Jnana. And then Asuram Bhavam Ashritaha. So now, the Maya Aparita Jnana, their conclusions may be misled, their conclusions may be misleading, their conclusions may be anti-devotional, but they don't have necessarily an agenda against God. It's just that they end up by their interpretations going against God. They don't know the ultimate goal. But Asuram Bhavam Ashritaha, those people who have right deep within them, they have a demoniac envy towards God, and they make it their mission to defy and deride and demolish others people's faith in God. So such people, outright atheists, and they're not say atheists, they are fanatical atheists. So Asuram Bhavam Ashritaha. What do we mean by fanatical atheists? They say atheism is the only truth and religion is the opium of the masses. Religion is a delusion. Religion is a curse on the earth. Religion is the source of all evil. The sort of people, they go against, they rail against God. So they are very unfortunate. And they also do not surrender to Krishna. Their whole purpose of life is to defy Krishna. How can they surrender to Krishna? So Krishna gives different categories of people in this way who cannot surrender to Krishna. Now, these people stay on in material existence. Now, we should not think that these are just four different categories of people. You know, we may ourselves have these tendencies in some small way. We may have some of the mudha tendency, some of the maya aparita jnana tendency, because of which that we will be checked and choked in our surrender to Krishna. Will not be, the force of our surrender will be blocked or it will be constricted. Choked means it's not allowed to move only. Choked means allowed to move, but it is allowed to move in a small size, not completely. So Prabhupada quotes Yamanacharya's verse over here to explain how people cannot surrender to Krishna, these kind of people. So he is quoting here. Oh my Lord, you are unknowable to persons involved with atheistic principles. Despite your uncommon qualities, features and activities, despite your personality being confirmed by all the revealed scriptures and the quality of goodness, and despite your being acknowledged by the famous authorities renowned for their depth of knowledge in the transcendental science and situation godly qualities. So he's saying that these asuram bhavam ashrita, they don't have much hope. Now after this, Krishna talks about those who surrender. Chaturvidha bhajante maam janah sukritino arjuna arto jignyasurarthaarthi jnaneche bharatarshabha. So chaturvidha, four kinds of people. Bhajante maam. So Krishna is not using the word surrender over here. He's using bhajante. So he says they begin the process by worship, by rendering devotional service. Eventually they will come to surrender. But right now they are doing bhajante. What are the reason? Jana sukritino arjuna. Sukritino. These are having some sukriti. This sukriti, word sukriti is contrasted with the word dushkriti, which was there earlier. Jana dushkritino sukritino. Arto jigyasur arthaarthi. Those who are distressed, those who are inquisitive, those who are the seekers of wealth, and those who are the seekers of knowledge. Jnani. Now, among these four categories, the scriptures give example. Artho is Gajendra, was in great distress and he surrendered to Krishna. Jigyasu are the Shaunakadi Rishis. Not all of them were already enlightened sages. They were inquisitive. They wanted to know. With Artharthi, there's Dhru Maharaj. He wanted a kingdom. And for that he surrendered, approached and started worshipping. Jnani, it can refer to various people. It can especially refer to the Kumaras who actually had knowledge. They refers to the impersonal aspect of knowledge. But from there they moved forward and came closer to Krishna. Bharatarshava Krishna. Oh Arjuna, these are the four kinds of people who start worshipping me. So actually Sukritina, these people have talent and it is not impiously directed. It is piously directed. Because of some Sukriti, they... Whenever there is trouble in this world, people take shelter of different things when they get in trouble. A person in ignorance takes shelter of drinking, smoking, violence when there is trouble. A person in passion takes shelter of money and sex and thinks that can solve my problem. Whatever the problem, throw money at it, the problem will get solved. And then the person in goodness takes shelter of knowledge, tries to rationalize, reason, and try to understand what is it, how should I deal with this. And person in transcendence takes shelter of Krishna. And Krishna, please resolve my mercy, misery. So now here these people are not transcendental. These people are in goodness. So in goodness, they do not surrender to Krishna, but they start worship of Krishna. Okay, God is there, God is supreme, maybe He will resolve my misery. And in this way, they start coming to Krishna. Now Prabhupada explains that these are not pure devotees. They are not pure devotees. What they are doing is, Prabhupada, that's why I use the definition of pure devotion over here. And he says that they are not pure devotees, but eventually they will come to Krishna. And how will they come to the level of pure devotion? When these four can come to render for devotional service and are completely purified by the association of the pure devotee, they also become pure devotees. And so that means they may start the process of worship because of culture, because of curiosity, because of various other factors. But what will raise them to the level of pure devotion is their association with pure devotees. So, in one sense, when they are beginning, they are at the level of Kanishta Adhikari. But from Kanishta Adhikari, how do they move to the level of Madhyam Adhikari? When they develop appreciation for devotees. And at that time, the Lord becomes... Ishwara becomes the object of their prema. He is not just a desire supplier for them. He becomes the object of love for them. So now the next verses describe how this happens. Let's look at this. So now Krishna is describing among these. Tesham jnani nitya yukta eka bhaktir visheshyate priyo hi jnani no atyartham aham sacha mama priyaha. तेषां ज्ञानी नित्ययुक्त अमंग दोस पीपल द ज्ञानी हु इज नित्ययुक्त हु इज कॉन्स्टेंटली एंगेज एक भक्ति विशिष्यते दैट पर्सन हैज वन पॉइंटेड डिवोशन विशिष्यते इज द बेस्ट इज द बेस्ट सो अमंग दिस फोर कैटेगरीज ऑफ पीपल ऑल द अदर्स आर कमिंग फॉर द फुलफिलमेंट ऑफ मटेरियल डिजायर्स And because they are coming for the fulfillment of material desires, their devotion is not connected, considered to be very elevated. But those who are, the person who is jnani, that means the person has knowledge. Okay, there is some highest, ultimate truth, which is beyond this material world. I want to know what is that truth, and I want to develop knowledge of that truth, and then ultimately I want to connect with that truth. So, that person is the best. So, now is Krishna referring to an impersonal jnani over here? No. Because eka bhaktir, Krishna is saying that person has bhakti and not just has bhakti, eka bhaktir. As was said in 2.41, vyavsayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana. So, what makes our intelligence played in this direction, that direction, that direction? What makes our intelligence played is the material desires. So, when the jnani has already understood that this material world doesn't have much to offer, I want to seek something that is beyond the material world. So, that jnani when focuses on the absolute truth, then eka bhakti. The purpose is not anything material. Purpose is to develop devotion. So nitya yukta. So that's why that person's devotion is not occasional. It is perennial. Nitya yukta. For one who goes to the Lord with material desires, and when there is trouble, oh God, help me. When trouble is over, thank you, bye-bye. It becomes like that for God. We may not literally say bye-bye to God. But we say farewell at least to serious devotional services that we might have been doing when we were in trouble. But when a person is not motivated by anything material, then nitya yukta eka bhaktir. So Krishna, when he's talking about here, he's not talking about impersonal jnana. He's talking about a person who has basically transcended the arena of material temptations and material tribulations. Understand this? Nothing so dreadful in the material world that I should get too agitated about it. There's nothing so wonderful of the world which I should get too agitated about. Let me stay focused. And he says, among this priyo hi gyanino atyartham. So it's very dear to me. Because that person is aspiring for devotion, and not just devotion, pure devotion. Eka bhaktir. Priyo hi gyanatra. Exceedingly dear to me. Aham sacha mama priya. So Krishna is talking about a bond of love between the jnani and him. So this jnani, because it doesn't have material desire, when it starts approaching Krishna, then the bond of love develops very quickly. Just like when the wood is there, which is not wet, when fire is put on it, immediately it blazes forward. So similarly, these jnanis, when the wood is not, when they don't have any material desires, so material desires like the water which makes the wood wet. So when there are no material desires, then the heart of this jnani is not having any distracting factor. So, once that person gets attracted to Krishna, then the attraction to Krishna blazes forward. Just it happened with the Kumaras. When they got the fragrance of the tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of Krishna, that attracted them. And they moved forward and surrendered to Krishna. So, now Krishna will describe that actually all of these people are dear to him. Udaraha sarva evaite. So now Krishna says, Udara sarve vaite. Actually, Krishna is saying, even the others are good. Now, Krishna is a very interesting word, Udara. Udara. Now, the word Udara often means charitable. So, why is the word charitable being used over here? Because, actually, Krishna, Ramacharya explains in his commentary over here that the Lord is so hungry for devotion that if we are desperate for something and if somebody gives us that thing, oh, you are so kind, you are so charitable, we will say that. So the Lord is so hungry for devotion that if somebody comes and offers devotion to Him, even if the devotion be mixed, even if the devotion be motivated, doesn't matter. He says, I'm so happy that you are offering your devotion to me. And He says, oh, you are so charitable. Udara. So that is the actually, it is the large-heartedness of the Lord that He calls these devotees as large-hearted. they are mixed devotees, but he called Sarvai Vaite. All of them, all four, Artho, Jigyasur, Arthati and Gyani, all of them are Udara. Because instead of going somewhere else when they are in trouble, they are coming to Krishna. But he says, Gyani Tva Atma Eva Me Matam. Atma Eva. But the Gyani is just like me. Yes, Atma Eva. It's a very deep glorification. Just like me. Astita Sahiyukta Atma. Astita. A person is situated in me and understand that I am the supreme goal. Mam Eva Atma Mam Gatim. Will attain me, understand me to be the supreme goal, and this will attain me. The other category of people have not yet understood Krishna to be the supreme goal. They have their own goals of removing distress, gaining wealth, like that. But either way, all of them will come to Krishna eventually. That will be described in the next verse. But important point over here is, Sahiyukta Atma. So Vishwanatha Thakur's commentary explains that the Jnanis, as Krishna says, they are equal to me. But Krishna talks about a pure devotee when describing about Uddhava in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that actually the pure devotee is more dear to me than me himself. So the Jnani is as dear to me as me, but Krishna says the pure devotee is more dear to me than me. So we see over here, Krishna is slowly but surely revealing his heart about how he loves those who choose to love him. We'll continue the discussion in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.